Because like, it'd be really annoying if you spend 600 quid on this and then you still have to stand on a box because you're really short.
I was anticipating a question like this because you are, if nothing else, fairly predictable.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, robots and IoT devices, welcome to episode 16 of season 2 of Bad Voltage. I am Jonah Bacon. I'm joined by my beautiful and rambunctious co-hosts, Stuart Margaret Langridge and Jeremy Nicole Garcia.
Nicole? Really?
I don't know. I was just on the moment.
Fine ad lib there, sir. Kudos.
I do try, and you can probably tell. So what are we going to be talking about in the show?
Well, one of the things we're going to be talking about is my review of the Jarvis Bamboo Adjustable Height Standing Desk.
And a decent question came up on our forum about the idea of using AI to build robots and war devices and whether AI is taking our jobs and so on and so forth. And we're going to take the last 6,000 years of political history, discussions about how AI is going to affect humankind, boil it all down into a 20-minute discussion and come out at the far end with the answer. Not all of that is the truth.
I, for one, welcome our AI robotic overlords. I just would like to point that out.
And now, Bad Voltage.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na news. I was trying to be inventive with the intro to this, but that's all I add. Sorry.
No. there will be no jingles. That's just not happening. Right.
So you're not wowed with my jingle?
I am not.
Wow me with some news,
Mr. Langridge.
I am, in
fact, not wowed.
This is my unwowed face.
I've never been wowed
face.
With my jingle.
Yeah, I am the opposite of wowed.
Right, so news. Those of you who have played with drones, and I'm looking at you here, Monsieur Ayla Bacon, you tried using drones from DJI?
I have not, no. But they look like very good drones.
I did consider a Mavic because that thing is super cool, but then I saw the price and decided to not do that.
Well, they do seem to be, you know, pretty high and pretty cool things, but they've just come up with a new wheeze where they've said firmware upgrades now mandatory. You don't apply the firmware upgrade or you block it from coming down to a drone and we'll stop it flying.
Seems reasonable.
Right? A whole bunch of owners have gone, nah, that's not acceptable to me in my piece of hardware. So I'm going to block that from happening and I'm going to circumvent the thing which turns the drone off on the cutoff date. And right. I'm interested in your, in addition to this piece of news, your thoughts on this kind of one way or the other. Short thoughts, right? This could be a segment or possibly a show or possibly,
possibly
12 shows. But DJI have known form with pushing updates that take features away, right? So in the same way that a lot of people don't like having their Kindle upgraded, for example, because Amazon have a bad habit of pushing out stuff which takes away a feature that they don't want you to have anymore and you paid for. So blocking firmware updates is a fine thing. But equally, the firm has a point, right? Especially when it's for a device which has rules. This thing can fly in the air, right?
Yeah.
And the FAA and people like that have rules about this sort of thing. So what are your thoughts on whether this is a legit thing to do? This ties back to the guy who... You remember the firm where they decided to break someone's locks remotely because they gave a bad Amazon review or whatever it was? This is all part of a similar kind of discussion, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at least from my perspective, I agree. This is one of those sticky situations, isn't it? Because yes, these things fly through the air, and I'd like some assurances that they work. That, you know, someone called Bob in his shed with his screwdriver, and you know, is not wedging it into a form that doesn't fly through the sky and instead flies into my car. But on the other side of things, you know, technical freedom. I'm of the view here that this is one of those vote with your wallet kind of situations.
Yeah.
There's loads of drones out there where you know, like the whole DIY drones community where people can build their own drones. I think if you really want to hack on your own thing, frankly, and I'm not an expert when it comes to drones, what I do know is that they're kind of the old school Microsoft of the drone world. Like everything is pretty locked down. They have proprietary features throughout all of this. And I think if you want your own homebrew drone, get another one. It would be my take.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they also required you to now create an account, didn't they? As part of
yeah.
this?
It's not clear to me whether, I think people have worked around that, but it's not clear to me whether that's actually a workaround or whether you don't strictly need an account, but they try and suggest that you do. And I don't know which it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the one time I could see forcing a firmware update on something like a drone, and this would be as a one-time policy, not as a change of policy, is if, let's say the FAA made new rules where drones couldn't do a specific thing and it would be illegal to do so. I could see them saying, like, yeah. after a certain date, we'll be in trouble if this doesn't our drones are breaking yeah. this law, whatever. It needs to be done by a certain yeah. date. I could yeah. maybe see that.
Like geofencing. Geofencing around the White House, kind of that kind of stuff. I can imagine.
But
I
can, aside from I can that, see, I just can't see a reason to compel firmware updates.
I can see that kind of argument. The problem is that I'm sure they haven't just gone, we need to push this because we think it's important to our bottom line. They'll be saying, we think this is important because we need to improve our compliance with existing laws or something. At which point, if whether you're making it, if you allow this, you're allowed to compel this and no one can complain about it thing, the people who are doing the compelling will always say, we're doing this because we have a legit reason to do so. And you can't argue against it because you're not allowed to reverse engineer the firmware. You're not allowed to check what it does. And you can't.
Well, this is, I think this is definitely one of those things where, I mean, I think if you look at I would argue that drones are still where they are right now. They're still very much like, you know, that whole, what's it called? That curve, the
Laffer curve?
Talking about you know, the Christensen adoption curve?
The adoption curve thing.
Clayton Christensen?
Right, yeah. The technology adoption curve thing, right?
The chasm one.
Right. Yeah. I would argue that drones are still very much like, they're not a mainstream thing yet. I mean, yes, there's like little consumer drones that you can buy from Best Buy that kids play with, but real drones. So I imagine a significant chunk of that market is enthusiasts. So it's people who are very much using them for a very specific purpose. So to me, like, this is one of those perfect vote with your feet kind of situations. Like, if I imagine, like, to me, the notion of pushing out firmware updates to serve the general demand for your product makes sense, right? You know, you have a general demographic of people who are using your thing. But so long as those firmware updates are only in terms of, like, the core pieces, like Jeremy was saying around, like, legal regulation, whatever, to me, that's fine. If they're just using that as a means to arbitrarily push crap out, like, this is one of the things that irritates me about the PlayStation 4, for example, is you can't use it unless you get a system update.
Yeah.
Right? The network features will not switch on unless you get a system update. Mm. And sometimes you don't necessarily want, there's been cases in the past where people don't want the features that are in that system update.
Right. So,
but this is the thing. Part of the issue in my mind is that I would agree if, as Jeremy says, if they need to push something out for to meet a legal requirement or something, fine, no problem. But every single firm who has downloadable updates has so comprehensively pissed in that particular waterhole by using it to push out stuff that they want and that you don't. And everyone's guilty of this, right? No one asked for a free U2 album, but suddenly it was there, right?
That's a particularly bad case.
Yeah, but it's all part of the same thing, you know?
I think it's an interesting example in that it includes the psychology of what it is, because you would think, as a marketing person, I'm guessing, they thought, well, free U2, even if you don't listen to it, who cares? And look at how spectacularly that blew up. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. But the sense that you're removing people's agency was, I think, that apart from just, you know, let's have a go at Apple because lol, right? There was, I think there was a real sense that people had that they were losing that sense of control agency, that this was their thing, you know, the actualization of their digital self, and suddenly someone rammed an album they didn't want into it.
Right.
And this is kind of, I'm not sure people feel quite as invested in their drone as they do in the phone that they spend 18 hours every day looking at it. But what do I know? If I spent $2,000 on a drone, probably I'd feel invested in it.
I don't know. You know, from the, you know, I was considering at one point going to work at 3DR, who at the time made drones. I don't think they're in the drone business anymore in terms of making their own drones. I think they're mainly working on like services. One thing that blew me away was like how hardcore the drone community is.
Yeah.
Those people are pretty intense. And it's cool because it's like, it's like the early days of open source. People are really into kind of building neat technology. So I can understand why people would be understandably kind of pissed off about this, but...
Yeah, I mean...
Shall we move on?
Yes, we can fill in more detail about DJI if people want to know it, but...
This yeah. is definitely again, a topic, great. I think. Head to the forum, yeah. community.bedvoltage.org, yes. and we want to know what you think, because this is definitely could be not even a segment, a whole show, I think. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be some discussion around this. So I'll do the next one here, and it's, I'm sure everyone has heard, and Google has announced Android O, and O stands for Oreo. Now, that in of itself is not interesting. There's new releases all the time. The one thing I found kind of interesting when I looked through the feature list here is the number one thing they touted was 2x faster. The second thing they touted was background limits. Now, these are two things that they've been touting every version. So it's interesting that we're reaching yeah. a point now where the main features are things that are not new in any way, really. The one then picture-in-picture was the third thing they mentioned, which I think Samsung's had for years.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I think might be a big deal, if they can deliver on it, and now remember, they promised this once before, and it totally did not happen, but Project Treble, which is basically what they're doing, is a modular architecture where there's a HAL below, and so theoretically, and major Android updates should be very easy for all hardware manufacturers to roll out. Whether that happens, we'll see.
Yeah, my immediate reaction was I don't care about Android O because I'll have to go and buy a brand new phone after it comes out to get it because no one's going to let me upgrade to it, right? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Anyone, by the way, who's listening to this going, you should be running Lineage O's, fuck off.
So I haven't gotten O yet on my Nexus. Have you got it on your Pixel yet?
Yeah,
I haven't yet, no.
I haven't had O for ages, if I'm honest. I'm sorry, carry on.
Wow. Boy. Okay, that was a little insight.
Perhaps a little bit too much of an insight.
Has anyone actually got an upgrade? You would think the Pixel would.
They said it was rolling out today, so I don't...
Yeah, I think they're probably... I mean, I found that with previous updates, they've been pretty good. You know, I'm on my third Pixel right now. and they've generally been pretty good rolling out. But yeah, I mean, I think it's... It's interesting to me because, you know, we talked in a previous show about some of the features going into Android O and how it was more focused on kind of performance and battery life and stuff like that, which are fundamentally kind of boring things. Like, you know, everybody moans about battery life and everyone wants it, but it's not what you want to see as the new feature announcement, right? Yeah, hey, more battery life. People want like the new whizzy stuff, but I'm really glad that they're doing this. Like, we need this kind of stuff.
Yes.
I'm happy that they're because Android is getting a little bit bloaty, but you know, this is why people should buy phones with stock Android or as close to stock Android, like the Moto G5, whatever it is, because you'll get it quicker. If you've got a Samsung, don't care what they say about making it easy to roll it out. It's going to take months before you get that. So.
I guess I disagree with obviously most handset manufacturers here because this is not what they're doing, but I would like one whole iteration, one generation of phones that is nothing but fixing the little things, much better battery life, the little niggles that get you every single day. I don't want a bunch of new whiz bang features. I want a phone I can take for the weekend and use the whole weekend.
They are
and no one sees that as I don't want to be yet thinner. I don't need a thinner phone. Eventually phones are going to be like a slit of paper. I don't need that. Phones are fine with the thickness that they are. I want a phone that is just more usable, generally speaking.
They are firmly convinced that it won't work. I mean, it's not like they haven't thought of this. It's that if they were to bring out a phone which was as thick as phones were 2 years ago, which were fine, to be clear, but you got all of that extra space and just filled it with battery so I could charge my phone today and it would last today and tomorrow, so I never had to plug my phone in during the day ever, they seem convinced no one would buy this thing.
They do.
It's like, I can't buy a phone the size of the iPhone 5. There just aren't any on the market at all. And it's the most, I could buy the iPhone SE. That's it. No one else wants to make one. It feels so underserved. Yeah. It's
the
so
thing
frustrating.
That I like, my one complaint with the Nexus 6P is that it's too big.
All phones too big.
That's
literally all.
It's interesting. It's interesting because I was under the assumption, because as you both know, I like big phones. I was under the assumption that big phones were the exception to the rule.
No.
That most people like smaller phones. There seems to be a trend in that area, and I wonder what it is. I suspect that part of the reason
I'll tell you what the trend is, Mr. Fucking Tickle. It's you and your massive-handed friends have stormed in and gone, what we want is a phone the size of a fucking dinner plate, and now that's all there is on the market. It's really annoying. Well,
I'm sure that you and Donald Trump can cry yourself to sleep.
We can. What phone is he? I mean, he tweets all the time, so he must have a little phone. What is it?
No, I mean he has an Alexa. He just shouts out, "Alexa, do this for me," and there's a woman called Alexa runs over and does exactly what he wants.
Actually, hasn't he got, because he's got an Android, but his staff have got iPhones, right? Because all the sensible tweets were on iPhones, and all the mad 3 o'clock in the morning ones were on Android, right? So he must have Android phone, and his tiny hands must work with it. So I wonder what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably gold, whatever it is. You know, I have a suspicion here, and I haven't, literally, this has just come into my mind, so I haven't done any research into this, not that I do any research anyway. I wonder whether the reason why people are doing this is because people don't want to have a separate tablet and a phone. So what they ended up doing is buying a bigger phone where you can watch Netflix and Amazon Prime or whatever else, because the screen is big enough and it feels reasonable.
I think they're buying bigger phones because if you want a flagship phone, you literally don't have a choice but to buy a bigger phone.
Yeah.
But there's got to be but the reason why manufacturers are doing this has got to be because they've seen market demand in certain areas. No, I don't believe manufacturers
are
just thinking.
Apple and Samsung do it and refuse to do something different would be my guess.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that what's happened is when people look at the sales figures, the bigger phones are going up significantly and the smaller phones are kind of flatlining.
Yeah, because the bigger phones are the Samsung Galaxy and the iPhone.
Yeah. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Which account for like 90% of all smartphones. That's 90%.
What's the smallest Galaxy? What's the smallest Galaxy you can get? I mean, heck, I've got one here, right? This is my old Galaxy S5, right?
Yeah, but they're on S8.
Right, I know, but do you guys consider this a big phone? The S5?
By today's standards, no, I would like a phone that size.
That's smaller than most of the phones on the market, and still larger than I personally would like it.
So you want? I've seen the size of your hands. How is it that you want a phone that small? Like, you don't have Donald Trump hands. You've got normal hands language.
I think the S5 was actually, I had that phone. It was a good size.
So this is a good size.
I want an iPhone 5. Is what I want.
I'll be honest with you. Part of the reason why I wanted the S5 is because it was big. So
this is my point. But now, that's exactly the point. You bought that as a big phone, right? And now it's smaller than most of the stuff on the market. It's not even flagship. I'm not kidding. If you want a phone the size of the iPhone 5, there is not one to buy. It's not like there is not one which is the latest model of flagship phone. There aren't any. Unless you buy it from some no-name, never-heard-of-them-at-all manufacturer, and it's got, 240x360 resolution screen. I want a flagship phone that's just 2 inches shorter than yours. That's all
why
I want, and
like,
battery.
Why don't you like the big phone? Is it because your pockets aren't big enough, or what is it?
Do me a favour, right? If you hold your phone in your hand right now, right, here I am holding my phone in my hand.
My Pixel or the S5?
Whichever. Can you actually reach the top corner if you hold your phone in one hand?
Yes.
You can reach the far corner?
No.
I have to sort of tilt my phone sideways in my hand and sort of balance it and then reach over it just in order to reach the far corner.
I have to kind of bend my fingers and tilt the phone a little bit to get there.
Right, so...
Yeah, my thumb's not that long.
Why precisely do you want a thing which is designed to sit in one hand where you can't reach it all with one hand? Why do you want this? It's stupid.
I'll tell you what.
It's like buying a pencil which is 6 feet long. You can't use it, and then going, but it's fine because I've got this 6 foot long pencil. I'll just use both hands for it. It's like, here's an idea. Get a normal length pencil.
All right, listen, numpty, right? This is the situation, okay? I can reach it. I just have to bend my finger a little bit. The benefit that I get is I have a nice big screen, so I don't have to squint when I'm looking at it. If I want to watch a video, it's a decent size. It's not like watching a 1995 multimedia video on a Windows PC, okay? You have to bend your finger a little bit, right? I mean, it's not that.
This may be because I've got smaller hands than a lot of people, but if it was just bending, it's more that I've got to actually kind of balance it a bit. It's weird.
That's your new nickname.
It is, right? He's cool. That guy's cool, Littlefinger. Right?
I mean, don't say anything. I'm just near the end of season two, so don't say anything about
season
about the game
two. All right, Grandad, go for it.
Sorry, I was doing important humanitarian work while you were sat on your ass watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, right. Okay, so this is John O'Bacon just watching season two of Game of Thrones with his Samsung Galaxy S5. Okay.
Yeah. Also, I just noticed I did not have an S5 because that is a large phone. I had an S3.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
So, correction.
All right, let's move on. So I have a bit of news as well to share. So it was recently announced that Chris Ronstroth, who is the CEO of GitHub, is going to be stepping down. Now, he's not leaving the company. He's going to be moving on to do other stuff inside the company. And also, on a related note, they had a new guy start there who is the SVP of technology, who is owning engineering, support, security and product. This guy called Jason Warner, who Ack and I both used to work with at Canonical.
Jason Warner's SVP of GitHub, really? Yeah. Wow, yeah. Nice one, Jason. Congratulations.
And Jason is a solid dude. He's really great guy.
He is.
And I didn't spend a huge amount of time with Chris, but from what I can tell, Chris is awesome as well. Like, Chris Wonstroth is, I get the impression, I don't know why things are moving around at GitHub. I'm guessing part of the reason for this is, look, the company's frankly growing up, right? There's, the company's growing. They've got higher and higher revenue targets to hit and all that kind of stuff. And this is normal in companies to move things around. I imagine it's pretty difficult when you're a CEO to make that transition. But I know there's been some other moves on the GitHub executive team. Nicole Sanchez, who ran the social impact team, she moved out and she's gone back to consulting. A couple of other people have left. So yeah, changes are afoot at GitHub.
When you say they're growing up, you mean getting all boring and enterprise, right?
Yeah, right.
That's what I thought. Off to GitLab then, people.
The one thing I'm excited about this is when I have spoken to Chris in the past, one of the things I like about him is that he's a genuine geek, right? Like he's a programmer and he enjoys writing code and he cares about the product. So the idea of him going back to that kind of stuff, I think is good. In the same way that you get people who found companies, and obviously GitHub was founded by three people, but when people found companies and then they're thrust into a CEO position and they're having to deal with, balance sheets and staffing issues and all that kind of stuff that they don't enjoy, when they then go back to doing the stuff that turned them on about what they were doing, I always like to see that. Like, it reminds me of at Canonical, it's not a CEO thing, but Scott James Remnant and Colin Watson, who were like legendary hackers, they became managers. Like, this is when I joined the management team at Canonical.
Running the foundations team and the desktop team. Yeah. And they were down.
And they were like, don't enjoy management. And I'm not saying Chris doesn't enjoy management. I don't know. But I get the impression that, it's a good choice for the company. So I was impressed to see that. Yeah. So I'm happy that
I've never met the bloke. But assume I'm right about it being all, enterprisey now and boring and what have you. Someone who got into it because he's basically a code hacker and went, hey, this thing where I check code into source control, it wouldn't be cool if there was some decent website for that. And he's now someone who has to think, okay, how can we best maximize our revenue targets for the next quarter? I can see why he's thinking, maybe don't care about that as much anymore. Gonna write some code.
Well, the thing as well that I've learned, particularly...
Also, presumably he still makes out like a bandit, right?
Oh, God, that guy's got to be... penny. Yeah, I mean, he's got to be rich beyond his wildest... I mean, the thing is, as well as, one of the things I've learned more and more about in recent years is, this happens with companies, right? Is they start out, you have someone who's a founder, they become a CEO, they start getting VC money, they start growing like crazy, hiring a ton of people... And then it goes beyond their capabilities and their interests. And what they tend to do is to bring in a professional CEO, someone like Martin Mikos, who knows how this shit works, has done it before, and then they can keep them moving forward. So it sounds like, it's just kind of the right time for GitHub for something like this.
That's fair play.
So I like Chris Wonstroth. I wish him all the best. We'll see what happens there. Stay tuned.
Linux questions, Datadog, consulting, Bad Voltage, opensource.com, Linux Fund, and the other online activities I partake in, I'm in my office a lot. And while I try to be active when I'm not in my office, there's substantial research coming out that indicates long periods of sitting are bad for your body, irrespective of how much exercise you otherwise get. Enter a standing desk. Now, before moving on to the review, I should note, while most studies do agree that sitting for long periods of time is bad for you, there's still ongoing research on whether standing undoes that damage. Now, that's not to say a standing desk isn't beneficial, but keep in mind there's not enough evidence yet from quality studies to prove exactly how beneficial. With that out of the way, onto the desk. While a variety of adjustable standing desks are available, after considerable research, I ended up selecting the Jarvis Bamboo from Fully. The desk comes in 7 different sizes with either rectangular or contour tops. I went with the 60 by 30 inch contour combination. From there, you can choose from an assortment of accessories, including programmable memory adjustment, wire management, and CPU holders. Once you make your selection, the desk is sent out the next day via ground shipping and will arrive in 2 boxes. The first box I opened had nothing but the desktop. You immediately notice how high quality the harvested bamboo is. It's sturdy but not too heavy and has a look I really like. The other box had the frame and all other components. Assembly was straightforward and took roughly 30 minutes, including attaching the optional CPU holder and my existing monitor arms. The wire management option is nice, but not custom built for the desk. I went with the programmable memory, and as a $35 upgrade, I'd consider it a must if you're going to go with an adjustable height desk. It has 4 programmable options, which makes the perfect height for standing or sitting a single click every time. Once assembled, I quickly put the desk to use. It's reasonably quiet considering it supports lifting over 350 pounds and is extremely stable at all heights I tested. I found myself standing roughly 20 to 25% of the time, and it's been an improvement not only for my health, but for my workflow. At around $600 as I spec'd it out, it's not cheap, but when you couple how often I'm at my desk with the fact that this desk should easily last over a decade, it seems like a small price to pay. So, what's the Bad Voltage verdict? If you're looking for an adjustable height standing desk, I highly recommend the Jarvis Bamboo. I've been using it for over a month now and I would not want to go back to a traditional desk. If you're committed to a standing routine but you already own a standard height desk that you like, or the price of the fully adjustable desk is just too much, options such as the Ergo Desktop Kangaroo Pro Junior or the Varidesk may be worth a look. Either way, I can also recommend the Topo Mini Mat, which I found extremely comfortable. As a note, you may have noticed this review is a bit lighter on details than most of mine typically are, and this was very much by design. There are a ton of high-quality, in-depth reviews available for the Jarvis and other variable height options, so there isn't a lot I can add here, and if you're going to spend this much on a desk realistically, you're going to want to do some research. But what I'd like to know is what the rest of the Bad Voltage team thinks about the concept and workflow of a standing desk, their opinion on buying a new fully adjustable desk versus using something like the Varidesk, and whether making either purchase is something they'd consider.
Interesting. I don't know about you, Ak. I think you primarily are a sitter. I don't think you do standing desk, do you?
No, I have tried in the past, but I think they're a pointless waste of time and money. So,
well, people say sitting is the new smoking. So why not just stick with smoking?
Stick with that old smoking. This is the problem. This is the problem with bloody giving up smoking. That now I've got to sit instead.
I currently use an extremely cheap standing desk. It's basically just it's a single, you know, set position thing, and I basically have to move my laptop and everything when I'm sitting down. The only thing I'd seen previously was the Varidesk,
right?
Which looks quite cool, but I always worry. I've never actually seen someone move it up and down, but it looks like everything would fall off if you did that. The thing I like about this is that it stays in the same position, right? And it just goes up and down. It's not like you're moving it backwards and forwards to get into the different positions, right?
No, I mean, everything's mounted. The CPU's mounted right in as part of the underneath the desktop, and then my laptop, 2 monitors, everything else is here. So even the mic, I mean, I could put it up right now and it would just go up. So it's...
Yeah, right.
I'm more impressed than I anticipated being.
A question for you. I'm sure if someone were to say, so did you get the variable height one and everything? because of all the detailed ergonomic studies. You could go, yeah, absolutely, and quote a bunch of those studies and so on. But did you basically get it because it's quite a cool toy where you could like press the button and watch it go bzzz.
It's the button, isn't it, that you bought it for, right?
It is quite cool, I will admit.
It's the button. It's the button. Okay.
because it did occur to me that your thing is cool, right? But it's $600. What you could do instead of this is just buy a box, stand on the box, and then go to Jack in the Box 300 times for the same amount of money.
The ease and then never stand at which again. You can go from sitting to standing means that I have done so legitimately every single day since I bought the desk. So if I had to do what Jono had to do and move stuff around, what I would do instead is not do it.
But yes, it's a good point.
I press one. Yeah. So when you get it, you set it up. So now one is sitting for me, two is standing, and it still has up and down arrows, so I can do that as well. And I have three other ones if I chose to. You know, you can sit on a ball, or some people do that weird, looks like a little horse thing, so it's balancing.
The little bendy chair thing.
Yeah, if I was going to do that, I could make that three, whatever it is. But because it is dead simple, and I only had to measure it once, I do it every day.
Now, I don't know how to ask this without sounding like a horrible bastard, but for people who are of a normal height, does it go high enough?
Maybe makes you a horrible bastard, yes. I believe they don't recommend you buy it if you're taller than 6'7".
It's what, sorry?
I believe they don't recommend you buy it if you're taller than 6'7".
Oh, so if that's also an abnormal height. Yes. So yeah. So if you're like 6 foot sort of size, it sounds like it's going to be...
Because it'd be really annoying if you spend 600 quid on this and then you still have to stand on a box because you're really short.
I was anticipating a question like this because you are, if nothing else, fairly predictable.
I'm not good with dimensions, right? But if you just in terms of like generally how much stuff you can fit in here. So could you fit, for example, you know, two fairly big monitors side by side, your keyboard, your mouse, you know, other bits and pieces? Like, is it big enough for that kind of stuff?
So I have a laptop, a speaker, two fairly large monitors on monitor arms, and this mic all on it. And I bought the middle one.
Oh, wow.
60 by 30. They also make a 72 by 30 as well that you could probably legitimately fit four monitors and a laptop on if they weren't bigger than 30-ish.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. Because I'm actually when we move house, I'm going to need to buy a standing desk. So this might be a good option.
Yeah.
Although it is bloody expensive.
I thought the
very desks were expensive. And so
that's the thing, though. If you look at that, what's it, about $400?
Yeah,
and you have to manually plunk something up in and out. So once you spend four, the jump to six just isn't high. And I think this is way, way, way nicer.
I think that's the base price for your one is about $450, I think. And then
so if you get the smallest rectangle one,
all the wire
management
stuff and all that.
Yeah, if you get the smallest rectangle one with no accessories, it's $400. Going contour added about 80. Going to the middle size added, I think, another 60. The CPU holder, I think, was 50. The wire management was like 30, and the programmable memory was about 35.
Yeah.
Programmable memory. What's that?
So the default one just has an up and down arrow. So you can, you know, you can lower it to 23 inches off the ground. You can raise it to almost 49 inches off the ground. The programmable one, you get the buttons where you can set.
Oh, you definitely want that, right? Because
Because, like I said, then you measure it once. I mean, the display, at least on the one that I bought, has exactly how tall it is. So I guess you could remember both and manually hit it, but no.
Which is so much easier. Just program it to go standing, place, sitting, place, wherever.
Yes.
I don't know whether there are people out there where people share a desk, but that would be even more useful.
But if two people shared a desk, you could have one, two be one person, and three, four.
Yeah.
I mean, if 10 people share a desk, then no, you'd have to adjust it, but... Like I said, it's still manually adjustable in tenth of an inch increments.
Yeah,
so,
which absolutely fine, I think. And I think the key point about, yes, it's really expensive, but to my mind, the expensive thing is going from spending $60 on a desk to spending $400 on a desk. Once you've done that, going the extra leap to see, if you've already decided instead of buying, I'll spend 10 desks money on the one desk because it's important to me, then spending 12 desks money is not, it's like buying a phone, right? You think to yourself, I'll spend 600-700 quid on a phone because I spend 12 hours a day looking at it every day for my whole life.
Right.
Right. Now, when you've got all your crap on there, yep. and it's, you know, does it, like, some, one of the things, criticisms I have of a lot of desks is, they, like, even my desk, I've got this huge desk, it's an IKEA desk, it's relatively cheap, but it wobbles around like crazy. Like, no, how stable is this thing?
Rock solid.
It is?
Oh, even good. When moving, like I said, because I have a lot of stuff stacked up on it, even when moving, it is very, very solid. And it's surprisingly nice. Quiet to lift 350 pounds.
Question about that. It's basically, the way you make things like that solid is by making them heavy. Right?
Yeah.
so they stay stable. What's it like if you've got to get it up three flights of stairs and then build it or whatever? Or does it arrive as a finished piece? At which point, how do you get it into a flat?
If you would have read the review, you would know that it comes in two boxes, one with just the desktop. So that box, to be fair, if you buy the largest one, is going to be 72 inches long, which is a fairly large box. The bamboo top is somewhat heavy, but for how big of a piece of single piece of wood that it is, I carried it up the stairs by myself. So, I mean, it wasn't too bad.
Oh, they're fine. Yeah. Okay.
The metal frame is pretty heavy, and I would not want to move it upstairs assembled, but even after assembled, you could just zip the frame off and carry it in pieces.
Oh, okay. So that's not actually that big a deal. Cool. Okay.
I like how you can spend $29 and get a pencil tray underneath it.
So some of the add-ons are a little goofy, I will concede.
I did, to be honest with you, think that was a bit off. And, I mean, locking casters, that's wheels, right?
Yes.
Who the hell has a desk with all their stuff on it which moves up and down automatically and rolls about the floor?
So I did not buy the casters. I guess if you wanted to easy wheel it around, you could. That would mean unplugging everything or having very large,
yeah,
very long, I mean, cords everywhere. So I don't know. I didn't get that.
It's not like, I mean, I can imagine there are desks where you'd want to be able to roll them around the place, no problem, but not desks with a computer on, because it's not going to be plugged into the wall the whole time, right? It's not like it's a crash cart. I didn't understand.
I guess
that
you
one.
Could zip a UPS into the top underneath, or under the bottom, underneath the desk, and then unplug it, wheel it around, replug it back in. I wouldn't, but
that's the stupidest thing.
Or just go with nothing but laptops.
I tell you what, man, it looks nice. What happens when the magic button breaks?
Hopefully, when the magic button breaks, you are within your warranty period and you get a new desk.
Do you know what your warranty period is?
7 years.
Oh, that's fine then. Goodness.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay. No, so that's what I mean. For something this expensive, sometimes you buy something really expensive and you think, I don't understand why that cost that much money. When you unpack this, you think, they put the engineering and resources into this. It was worth it. It looks right, and feels premium.
And do you have the contour one or the rectangle one?
Contour.
Right. Cool.
Because I sit at it, I don't know why you would want the rectangle one. Aside from A, it comes in way more sizes, and B, it's $80 cheaper.
Right.
And yeah. to be honest with you, paying $80 extra for them to cut a curved bit out of your desk seems a bit rich to me. Call me picky, yeah. But I mean, I don't know, maybe they did a whole bunch of complicated things, but as far as I can tell, the contour desk is just the uncontoured one where they cut a smile out the front of it. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but...
And they beveled. They nicely beveled it as well. But yeah,
As somebody who was suffering through a house remodel right now, I now know that any kind of fabrication and labor basically costs loads of money.
Yes.
So that's why the reason why, irrespective of the fact that you are going to be getting less wood. That's a weird thing to say in the context of that conversation.
So, all right. Did you, just before we move on, you obviously looked at the market and picked this one for a reason.
Yeah.
What would you say makes this stand out above everything else? Is it just like, in general, that it's high quality and it seems to do everything you wanted to do and it's worth the money? Or was there something specific that made this one stand out over the 250 rivals?
So it's a combination of, while $600 seems expensive, there are a whole bunch of these that are $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 that...
For a desk?
Yeah, that realistic, like human scale one makes one that starts at $2,500. And that one's hydraulic, so while silent, runs independently, so it can get off kilter, where this one is one raising piece. And, I mean, it's not loud enough.
Why would you ever want one of the legs of your desk to be
So a some of them
way to even, the other one.
Some of them, even in the price range of this one, are hand crank.
Yeah, so those I've seen.
What they've managed to do is build a high quality desk that is cheaper than the competition in most ways, but still better. And it's just, I think they got a bunch of the small things correct. And are, but I mean, they're by far leading the market right now in this segment, so it's not a surprise that I picked this one. I mean, many, many offices, especially startup offices I go to, have this desk. Both co-working spaces by my house have this desk. I mean, it's a desk I see everywhere.
One of the things I dig about this as well is, for my, because I'm glad we're doing this, because I think I'm going to buy one of these as well for when we move, is that I sit down and work, I stand up and work, but there's also a scenario where I'm, for example, recording music and I have a guitar. And then, you know, if because, you know, either of those two heights, the height isn't right and I end up getting cramp in my hand.
Right.
So like, I like the fact that you can have these different settings. And obviously, you know, it would be good for people who are sharing a desk, right? So, right. You know, if Erica wants to use it, her standing height is obviously more like yours, Jeremy. So, sorry, I couldn't resist it. It's okay. Yeah. Don't worry. It's okay. You're a person as well. So we had a post go on to our forum at community.badvoltage.org by someone called Paul Galt. Thank you, Paul, for kicking this off. And the topic title is AI in our scary killer robot dystopian future.
Yes.
Okay. And he basically links off to an article that talks about more than 100 leading robotics experts are urging the United Nations to take action in order to prevent the development of, quote, killer robots. So one of these people is billionaire Elon Musk, who is warning of a, quote, third revolution in warfare. So essentially these people are, you know, these experts, 116 of these experts, are actually calling for a ban on the use of AI in managing weaponry. Now, there's a couple of things that I think are interesting in this. One is where, you know, the discussion around kind of the purpose of AI in weaponry and warfare and all the rest of it, and whether that's something you can limit in some kind of way. But then it also leads on to the further question of all this, like a lot of people are worried about kind of like artificial intelligence and autonomy and things like that taking over people's jobs, and you know, what seemingly seems like benefits in one way actually having a negative outcome more broadly. So what do you guys think?
Big question.
About which aspect of that massively broad multi-question question?
Yeah. You've got 30 seconds to solve the problem. Go.
It is interesting if you look at the views on AI, we're starting to actually see people push back a bit on the idea of untrammeled free AI research, because it's a species ending event if we screw it up. Right, which is not good. Equally, you don't necessarily want to get on board with all the extropian transhumanist loony people. So, you know, it's like, let's join this.
At least one of them is going to listen to this, by the way, and give you a righteous booting.
Well, that will happen.
Stay tuned for that, listeners.
Yeah, then I'll say, you know, the singularity is basically a religion. Stop thinking about it. But, you know, whatever, we get to that.
Boom.
But yeah, so there's a whole bunch of sides on this, certainly. I think it's useful to separate it into two separate things. You've got the whole big picture. Do we want to do this because it's a species extinction event if we get it wrong? But then separately, how's it going to affect our lives in the sort of the medium term, which is more about the, are robots going to take our jobs rather than, is AI going to eliminate the human species as a whole? You know?
Right. You know, on the AI in you know, as a weapon kind of thing, there's no doubt that weapons will become smart. Like I can foresee robots used in warfare, and that they're driven by AI. And essentially what you end up creating is, you know, these incredibly powerful fighting machines that are able to respond way quicker than any human soldier would. I get that. And I think that's just the natural evolution of technology.
We already have all that, right?
No, but I mean, like to science fiction kind of levels, right? We've already got, I mean, AI has been used in drones and this, that, and the other. I get that, right?
Nobody has aimed a weapon with their own eyes and a crosshair painted on the scope since like 1960.
Right.
You know, this technology is just there.
What are you talking about? Right. That's and what snipers do to this day.
Okay, right. Well, yes, fine. Individual hand-carried rifle weaponry, yes. There is less of that. But even then, the scopes and things like that are not just a hollow tube with lenses in. Right?
Yes. Right. Anyway.
But the thing that worries me more about this is the increasing dependence on technology and weaponry and the risk of people hacking it. That's what worries me more, is that, yes, I don't deny the fact that if you intellectually take AI to the ultimate conclusion, then the AI becomes smarter, more capable than the human, and then it can turn against the human. I get that. That's the Terminator 2 kind of scenario. What worries me more in the short term is more and more dangerous things being rigged up to the internet and powered by technology because of scale and ease of management and whatever else. And with a seemingly growing trend in government-sponsored cybercrime, that's the thing that worries me more in the short term.
So you're more worried that this thing gets built and then it gets misused by people perverting right. from its original purpose, rather than being worried about the purpose that it's built for itself being a problem.
Yeah, I mean, like there is a worry in people that, you know, you build these like killer robots and they have an AI brain.
Right.
And then what happens is the robot AI brain, basically, it's got the ability to turn the kill switch off and it becomes essentially a sentient, not sentient, but it becomes an automated killing machine.
Hang on, bear with me, right? Literally nobody is actually worried about the whole movie plot thing of the thing decides to turn against humanity. That only happens in films.
I actually don't agree that people aren't worried about it. I think a lot of people
Musk and Hawking's whole point is that something like that, maybe not in the exact movie plot way, but generally speaking, that would be the final outcome.
But that's the end. That's the ultimate potential conclusion, right. I think people are worried about. Yeah. I'm more worried about is building dangerous things that have an electronic infrastructure attached that can be hacked, and aggressive state-sponsored
hacker. Here's the thing I don't necessarily understand about building dangerous things that could be misused has happened for the entirety of humanity. This is not new. Nothing about this is new. Not one thing,
of course,
in my opinion.
But the ability to access those things across a network, I would argue, is new. Right. Yeah, you can take a gun today and go out and murder someone. You can go and misuse that weapon. But if you have something, it's kind of the same thing about, like, you know, such as nuclear power stations, right? I'm sure that there are risks, many risks attached to somebody in Russia or China attacking a nuclear power station in another country.
Bear with me. So your worry here is not actually about super high-tech AI controllable space-age sci-fi weaponry. It's about the IoTification of everything. If someone went, right. we're gonna connect this thing up to the internet like we do with all our bloody light bulbs and everything, but they did that to hand grenades, you'd be just as unhappy about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate concern.
Absolutely. Right.
That's why I say it's, in my mind, that's the shorter term worry.
But I mean, we've had remotely controlled drones with high-powered weaponry for many, many years, so I still don't think it's a new problem till today.
No.
It's a new problem
I agree, but I imagine that right now, those instances, and I have no idea if this is the case, I'm just guessing, those instances of that technology is relatively like specific and then highly managed in certain ways. I think if the broader military apparatus starts getting hooked up in an IoT-type way, it increases the attack surface. That's essentially what I'm worried about.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but you know, that's kind of beside the point. I'm less worried about the machines taking over thing. But I think that's the thing that's more dangerous right now.
I think there's it's interesting. Look at Bill Gates, for example, right? He's called for there to be increased taxes on robots, on robotics research, and so on and so forth, and. But his goal for this, as I understand it, is it's basically an economic forcing function. What he wants to do is slow down the speed of evolution of this stuff. He wants people to stop and think about it in more detail and not just go, hey, we can do this and then steal a 5-second march on our competitors and make a bunch of money. Stop the whole Silicon Valley plunge after this thing kind of mindset as it applies to building remorseless kill droids, right? And that's not a bad way of doing it. You say you tax this stuff, not because, you know, we want the money, but because we want you people to just slow up a bit.
Do you think you would have felt that way about taxing computers in the 80s and going
into
the 90s?
It does seem alarmingly hypocritical if someone were to have said this in 1983 about, he's like, I want a computer on every desktop. He's like, are we sure that's a good idea? What we should do is tax the shit out of it, stop people doing it. They'd be like, it's standing in the way of innovation, right?
Now he also wanted to tax email, so I'm suspicious of anything he says lately because it turns out he got lucky once, and other than that, is almost definitely wrong.
Again, the whole tax email thing, it's an idea. It's not just a nutty idea. The point was that sending an email would cost you 0.0004.
In my opinion, staving off progress is always a poor strategy because it never works, ever.
Now, the flip side of that is that a lot of people basically make that argument going, progress is basically inevitable. All you can do is try and control it. You can't avoid it and whatever.
It's inexorable.
It's not clear to me that anyone actually really has tried, except in a kind of a Luddite way, right? It's always been most people want the progress, a few people want to nail entrepreneurs' feet to the ground, so it looks bad. But if you actually look around, I mean, this all gets very political, but you look around the world and go, are we actually better off? And the answer is, maybe not, right? And we ask...
Well, I think the thing is, as well, is you can... I agree with Jeremy. You can't stop the progress, but what you can control is the consumerization of that progress, right? So how that progress is made available for people to use, I think you can influence that a little bit better. But the thing that's going to influence that is not regulation. It's going to be the market, right?
No,
that's what people are going to vote. People are going
to
vote.
To a degree, in some cases, it might need to be regulation, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the point. And I utterly disagree that the way to stop people from doing things because it gets money as quickly as possible is to have it regulated by the invisible hand of the market, which is there deliberately to optimize for that kind of behavior.
Right.
No, what I'm saying is that, yeah, I agree with certain things. You do have to have some kind of regulation to make sure that, well, for various reasons, but I'm just saying that I think that, like, ultimately consumers decide. Right, consumers will pick what's interesting to them, what's relevant to them, right?
And
so
we are seeing talk about people trying to think about this in a more joined up kind of way, right? This guy with the best name on earth, right? His name is Jingbing Zhang. He's a Dr. Zhang. My apologies. He wrote the Worldwide Robotics 2017 Predictions Report. And he says, right, by 2019, he predicts that 30% or more, or maybe more than 30% of the world's leading companies will employ a chief robotics officer. Right? So, I mean, obviously, you know, this a guy writing the Worldwide Robotics 2017 Predictions Report is not going to write a report that says probably not going to be any robots. But nonetheless, we are seeing people talking a lot about the increasing roboticization of the ecosystem, which, I mean, Isaac Asimov specifically wrote a story about how this was a bad idea. But but ignoring that, are seeing increasingly more of that kind of thing happening. And people saying, well, how do we deal with that? What do we do?
So moving on then to that, I know this segment's already bouncing around, but it's a big topic.
It is.
About, you know, the notion of automation taking people's jobs. I mean, again, talking about, you know, the inevitability of progress, there's no doubt in my mind that that's going to happen in certain situations. Have you guys ever seen that video of how the Amazon warehouse works?
Yeah.
No.
I'll post this on the forum. It is fascinating to see. It's you know, they've got these little yellow robots that basically move shelves around and then, you know, basically do all of the work of procuring the, you know, so an order comes in and they basically go and get the items in a shelf and they bring it to someone who will then pull it out and put it into a box. So there's like, they've basically optimized the, instead of having somebody on, you know, a golf cart running around a huge warehouse to go and find all the different pieces, it actually brings these, you know, these pieces to the person. So they've optimized different bits of like that supply chain. And I get that, right? That's stuff like that is just going to happen, right? Because companies are going to see it's not so much necessarily about replacing people in many ways. It's going to be more about, it's just going to be faster, right? It's just, you're just going to end up doing a better job. Like Amazon probably couldn't do their, you know, 2-day shipping or their Amazon Prime shipping if they didn't have those kinds of robots in place, because they probably couldn't hire enough people who would work fast enough to do that. So that,
not,
to me,
not
is
sure
gonna
I
happen.
Agree, but I take your point that kind of increasing using robots to do, this is going to sound tautologist, but using robots now, to do the sorts of jobs that robots can do has been a common thing for years. I mean, when I first got out of university, when you loaded files and they'd been retired to tape, what actually happened was down in the basement, a tape robot, which was on little rails, rolled backwards and forwards, and literally a robot arm pulled a backup tape out of the big box of backup tapes and then wheeled over and plugged it into a drive so your file could be recalled from tape, right? And, I mean, the reason I remember this is because the robot apparently one day made a break for freedom by jumping its rails and attempting to flee the basement, right?
Johnny Five is
precisely right. But that was in the last millennium. I mean, admittedly, it was only 2 years before the end of the millennium, but that's not the point. It was in this 1998. That was 20 years ago, and this is just an increased example of that, right?
So, I have a. I was to say it's a half baked theory. It's more like a quarter baked theory. Okay.
Literally raw theory here from John O'Bacon.
It's only just a theory. Let's be honest about this. So, you know, when I was at school, and you get to the end of your GCSEs, which you have to do in England, people can leave school, I think, at the age of 16, if I remember right. Right. So, people go on, they go to do their A levels or they go to university after that or whatever else. A lot of people will drop out because they're just not motivated by school. And a lot of the people who I went to school with would end up working in a McDonald's, or they'd work at a KFC, or they'd do like some kind of manual labor. They'd be like moving boxes in a warehouse or something along those lines. But it was very much manual labor. I wonder if one of the outcomes of this, as we see more and more automation, is that the baseline jobs in society are going to have to be a bit more towards the knowledge work type thing. So if all of the manual labor stuff is going to be replaced by robots, I wonder whether just people, I think, adapt to survive, if the baseline for survival is going to be instead more like data entry or something that's going to be more involved using a computer or whatever else, but it where essentially, you know, the baseline for what is the minimum job is actually going to be a little bit higher. So there's a broader societal benefit because those baseline skills may be more applicable in lots of other ways, as opposed to just, I'm a person with arms who can pick stuff up and move it from one place to another.
I disagree with almost all of that. So, goodness. Jeremy, go first.
And to be clear, I don't know whether I agree with this. It's just an idea.
I think the current trend is already proving you wrong, because one of the biggest industries hurt by robots so far has been lawyers. So
yeah.
But I think machines, really? If you look at this, I'm a big fan of
Hang on, before you go on, why is that? I'm curious.
So before, high-priced senior attorneys paid lower-priced, less senior attorneys and paralegals to do a lot of research. Now what they do is teach an algorithm what they're looking for and employ none of those people.
Yeah, I worked for a law firm. You'll remember that, right? And
yes.
And
you loved that job, didn't you?
I did. I did love it to bits. but an awful lot of the legal IT industry was precisely about essentially replacing paralegals, replacing secretaries with algorithms. They are always eager to adopt technology, whether it was voice dictation software or things to do searches or to put together cases. Everyone had a practice management system, the whole works. And there was a whole bunch of stuff where if you were a lawyer in 1965, you would have been a man with your double-breasted suit in your wood-paneled office and your quill pen dictating commands to your army of secretaries with notebooks, and now what you are is still mostly a bloke, to be honest, but you just got a laptop, a computer, and that's it. And most of the army of people are no longer there. That's knowledge work being taken away. To be honest with you, it's not at all clear to me that someone doing mindless data entry is actually better than doing mindless box stacking.
No, but I don't know if that necessarily disproves the theory, because I'm not saying that other knowledge worker jobs won't be taken away. Of course they will be, right? We're going to see that in lots and lots of situations. That doesn't surprise me, the lawyer example. I just wonder whether, as it relates to, like, I'm just using the example of you know, like I say, when I left school, or like a bunch of other people who I, like people, who, for example, who I used to play in bands with, right? A lot of people had just manual labor jobs. They were literally, like, the guitarist in my band literally moved boxes around a warehouse. Like, that was his job. And he loved it, because he was like, you know what, man, I don't want to have to think about this stuff. My passion is I want to go to work from 9 to 5. I want to be done with it at the end of the day, and then to be able to have my life to be my own. He just wasn't interested in, like, the rat race of the career. And I wonder whether if those jobs are going to go away, whether the baseline requirement will be more marketable skills.
People won't suddenly get skills out of nowhere because of that. I think the thing to keep in mind here, and what seems to be getting lost in this somehow, is that machines, for some definition of the word machine, have been taking human jobs since, let's go with the mid-1800s.
Yeah, Industrial Revolution.
Right? So if history teaches us anything, it's that manufacturing jobs were first automated and then went overseas, right? Agriculture jobs almost went away when you consider how many farmers it would have took even 100 years ago compared to now, let alone a couple hundred years ago, let alone, you know, to now. And businesses make more profits because of that. But in turn, even when labor forces got replaced or displaced, humans have survived because ultimately people find a way to make money. That's how people end up working. I don't see that aspect changing. I think what's interesting, and this is a less baked theory than yours because it just kind of is dawning on me, but I think the Industrial Revolution kind of created, in historical terms at least, a place where labor was especially important, and the power of the individual worker was, once again, in historical terms, a lot larger than it had been in any other time. And what if that was just a blip and we're headed to like a kind of neo-feudalism where the small minority of elites now find it cheaper to maintain control via technology than via the way they have in the past, which is a grim future that I don't necessarily believe in, but it's certainly possible.
You effectively end up with an aristocracy, which is being led by the people who are the leaders of the who are the owners of the technology.
I don't want to be all Marxist about this, but you're saying this like that's not what the world is like today.
I do not think that is what the world... Yeah, you have a dim view of the world, jeez.
No, I don't believe that either.
Really?
No, you're a perpetual 13-year-old. Fight the power!
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, wearing your Che Guevara t-shirt and listening to Rage Against the Machine.
they're not called Rage Against the Machine anymore, they're called Prophets of Rage. But
they are quite good.
Oh, really? I thought you'd only listen to the Rage Against the Machine era.
Oh, no, yeah, not going to be all hipster about out. It. No, I do think I'm not going to go full Karl Marx here, but I think there's a lot more of that than there should be. I agree,
but that's just life, isn't it? That's just the way the world sadly works.
I really don't think it is. I mean, this is the problem. Like, this is, yeah, fine, 13-year-old, fight the power, whatever. But the alternative is just being fatalistic about it. It's going, oh, well, yeah, basically what happens is rich people fuck the poor. There's nothing we can do about it. Might as well just roll over and deal with it. What happened to you, man? I'm not the one who sold out. You have.
I've never thought that rich people just fuck the poor. And I think some rich people fuck the poor, absolutely. There's some horrible rich bastards in the world. There's some horrible middle-class bastards in the world. There's some horrible poor bastards in the world. The point is, there's horrible bastards and there's good people. And the amount of money that somebody has in their life has an impact, not denying that for a second. But I think to have the view that, well, you know, the rich fucking screw the poor over, I think that's naive.
This is obviously a topic that we could debate about forever, and I'm kind of on both sides of the spectrum, depending on a lot of things at that moment. And this is one of those very nuanced, because I mean, I don't think Marx considered the poverty level baseline necessities what they are now, which is like two cell phones, indoor running water, air conditioning, a car, TV. So I mean, I don't know how applicable some of this
is. Yeah, no, someone actually asked Adam Smith whether you were allowed to demand a linen shirt as a baseline thing of necessity. And his argument was kind of, maybe, you know, because obviously it isn't actually baseline survivability, but equally, if you don't have one and all your competition in other shops do, then no one comes to your shop. So maybe, you know, and this is literally the guiding political discussion for the last 6,000 years. We're probably not going to solve it today.
Exactly.
Probably not.
But it does feel, it honestly does feel to me like the pendulum swinging a bit in one direction.
Yeah.
Or a bit too far in one direction, that we are increasingly building a world in which the profit motive is more important than it was last year and more important than it was the previous year. And things like regulation and foresight are being less considered than they were last year, unless they were than the previous year, and so on and so forth. I don't want to sound like this whole kind of, you know, back to the 50s disaster, but I think someone like Gates saying, much as don't necessarily agree with the way he's approaching it, but saying, well, we need to just slow down and think a little bit. That seems to be the message that Musk is putting out about AI, and that people like Nick Bostrom are putting out, and Gates about robots, and so on, right? Don't just get on board or get out of the way. How about getting everyone to just take a breath?
Well, I think we are definitely running towards another Oppenheimer moment where someone goes, oh man, what did I just do?
Right.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that people are necessarily becoming, I don't think the world is becoming more and more profit motivated. I think it's been like that for a long time, particularly in the US. I think where there is a difference here, I think England is getting more like that. I think England's becoming more capitalist.
You're
more
talking about the country
society
from which the East India Company came, and you're saying the US is worse as a profit-driven entity?
What I'm saying is I think that the day-to-day lifestyle in the UK has become more and more Americanized and capitalistic than beforehand, right? When I go to England, I experience England in like, I can see the big difference culturally because I only go there every 6 or 8 months, right? And one of the things that I've noticed is that England has become, I would argue, it feels more and more American than I've ever seen it before. Like it's become more and more of a capitalist society, from what I can tell.
I think you're mistaking materialistic with capitalistic.
Maybe. I mean, I think people are becoming more materialistic.
And maybe consumerist.
Consumerist, yeah. But I would argue that, yeah, because I mean, consumerism is an effect of capitalism, right? I mean, you kind of get that in many ways, or in some sense. I don't know. I'm not an expert in this, but yeah, I mean, I don't think things have changed that significantly. But I agree that, you know, I think what is changing is people now are more and more aware of the role of government in their lives, and I think that's becoming as they should be. And I think now people are starting to think of like, what is the role of government and regulation and stuff like that with these kinds of technologies? And I think we're starting to see for the first time technologies that evolve, right? Like traditionally you'd get a technology, you go out and buy a phone and it would just get smaller, get faster, whatever else. But obviously with AI, it's kind of that kind of self-improving kind of thing. And I think that just obviously freaks people out. Show.
So in the last show, I should say, I talked about Duolingo, right? The language training thing. And loads of people on the forum were like, yeah, it's really cool. And I was amazed to discover how many people are doing it or have tried it or whatever. And as far as I can tell, it is completely free. A whole bunch of people confirmed that. Thank you very much. And it's just great. And I suppose, you know, if you're going to be a big firm and you're going to have millions and millions of users, then it's reasonable that I will run into some of those millions, right? Because there are millions of them, literally. But I was fascinated to find how many people have said, yeah, I've tried that, or yeah, I'm into that, or yeah, I'm learning a language. Isn't that great? Yeah. The people are just learning a language in their spare time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, one would think here that almost like the world is getting better, like technology is making our lives better.
Technology absolutely is improving our lives in that fact. That's brilliant. I completely agree with that.
That was for those who listened, that was a bit of a pot shot. We were having an off-air conversation about whether the world is actually getting better or not better. And Captain Grumpy Pants in England is of the view that the world is not getting better. So, yes, good stuff. Duolingo. We should learn language at some point.
Well, I just pick up this thing and spend 5 minutes a day. I honestly don't think you drop out the far end of this being like fluent or anything. But I think it will give you the kind of level I've got of French, say, where I can walk into a hotel and order a room or buy dinner in a restaurant or have a vague conversation with someone on a bus. That the sort of thing you learn at school, basically. It lets you do that just in 5 minutes per day. It's fab.
So you could go and learn German and go to a cafeteria.
Oh, for God's sake.
Did we share this story on air? I can't remember if we did.
It might have also been an off-air conversation. I don't remember. We talked about it during the show, definitely.
I feel like we should share this story, Jeremy. All right.
I'll leave the floor to you.
I'm going to go ahead with this. All right. So we were... the three of us went to Oktoberfest with a wonderful guy called Taurus Balog, who flew us all out there to do Bad Voltage in Fulda in Germany. So before Fulda, we went to Oktoberfest. We had a particularly heavyweight session at Oktoberfest, woke up the following day, a little hungover, went to go and grab some coffee and some breakfast.
Bad day at Black Rock that morning.
It wasn't
even the worst morning of the trip.
No,
Jeremy Garcia.
It wasn't the morning when I honestly thought Jeremy was going to die that day.
Mental note to anyone listening, if you see these two Muppets out drinking, don't partake and join because you will utterly hate yourself the next day. Back to your story, Jono.
Great life choices happen.
I got an email, a message from someone I was out with earlier in the week, and they'll remain nameless because I haven't got permission to share this, but I got a message saying, I'm still hungover, I want to die, and then I'm doing this webinar, and then I'm making a blanket for and never drinking again.
I can believe it.
And I'm like, well, sorry. I was fine. No problem.
I knew it was going to be a week like that when I literally stepped off the plane from San Francisco and Jan from
Jan Wildeboer
Jan and Ak this is where you walk into the airport and they both, as I walked out, they handed me a beer as I walked out anyway. So Mr. Langridge here was actually quite impressing all of us with his German, and he was like just kicking off conversations with various people and ordering food and all the rest of it. I'm very, very impressed. We go into this little cafe, and this quite attractive lady who was working behind the counter starts kicking off a conversation with him, and he starts talking in German, and clearly he's impressing her. And we were impressed. We're like, yeah, look at that. Look, his German is pretty good. And then she launched into like, she recited the last six seasons of Game of Thrones in German or something. And watching him shrink and shrivel into, like, I have to say, though, you did seem to save it pretty well. Like, you did seem to save yourself. But that was,
the issue here is obviously that there's a basic level of competence where you sound like you're stumbling through the language. And then if you go a little bit above that, people just think, oh, you're fine then. You just speak German. I'm like, no, that's not how it is, right? And I'm sitting there in this place getting abuse off these people, off these two, because apparently my German gets better when I'm talking to attractive women in cafes, which is not the truth.
It's not that it gets better. It's that it gets an order of magnitude better.
No, it doesn't. But
it also gets more animated as well. It was like an interpretive dance mixed with talking.
That I'll grant you. But
it's not for us to mock. Like, I don't know German, and I was very impressed with you. I'm not sure that's because I don't speak German.
I was totally knackered by her assuming that I could actually speak fluent German, and then I'm like, okay, great, thanks. So, yeah.
Good stuff. So yeah, people go and learn it. I also want to have a bit of a shout out to Warren Hill, an old geek on the forum. I posted about this on the forum, but we have these trust levels in Discourse where as you just participate more, you go up these levels. And we only have two community members in the highest trust level there. And that's Warren Hill and Old Geek. And they've anyone who's been on the forum will know who these two folks are. So thank you, Warren Hill and Old Geek, for all of your service to the forum. And particularly Warren Hill recently for doing a little bit of moderating. So, yep, it's good to see lots of activity happening there.
Yep.
Yeah, anything thanks. Else?
Nah, we're good.
I think we're done, aren't we?
Well, good stuff today, man. Chop, chop.
Yeah, I've got to go and get some lunch. So, all right, folks.